I'm Dave Borden, I'm representing BLM.
Beth Hammond, representing non-consumptive.
Andrea Merrill, non-consumptive.
Brett Prevedell, at large.
Wayne McAllister.
Boyd Blackwell, I'm the secretary of the RAC.
Randy Durth, sportsman.
Dan Abeda, Forest Service.
Okay, great, thanks. We'll give Boyd a minute to give us an update.
Well, what I wanted was a second to tell you, if you want to talk or anything, we'll only put out two mics for this meeting, so we'll pass a mic down to you. Just raise your hand and we'll pass a mic to you. If we have somebody from the audience that wants to talk, we'll spin the mic around so that they can talk. So in the interest of time, with just two agenda items, I'm going to cut real short a regional update, and that we're just putting together our coordination meetings with all the other agencies in the region, and those are going really well. And I think right now everybody's mostly in planning, getting things ready to go for the year. We're glad to have the snow, and we appreciate that. So that's all.
Okay, we better jump back here to item number two. All you guys have reviewed the minutes of our last meeting, and we need to approve this agenda. We need a motion on the minutes for last meeting.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second it.
And Beth seconded. Okay. Appreciate that. This is our short agenda today. Oh, we need a vote. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimous? Thank you.
I should say one thing. We have a stand-in today for Gail. This is Gail over here.
I am Gail.
This is Rory. And
you're going to need
here.
A bigger table, Rory.
And she's not as fast as Gail at typing, but she's faster than Gail at writing. So she's supposed to keep track of everything for us, and she may stop us and ask for clarification. So,
yeah. So if you need a name or whatever on that, yeah, please stop
just make them up.
I right. Really appreciate her filling in.
So and so with the blue shirt.
Okay, great. So Boyd's give us an update and everything. I take it we have an approval of the agenda for today. We need an official motion to approve the agenda. And that was for the minutes on the agenda. All right, move on. So, let's introduce Adam. Adam, can you introduce yourself?
Yes.
Start with.
My name is Adam Cavalunas. I'm the Utah Prairie Dog Recovery Biologist for the Division of Wildlife Resources. And I work out of Cedar City, Utah. And there's four others giving the same presentation across the state tonight. So. I don't know if there's anything else you'd like to know about me.
Ron, are you picking this up on the mic okay?
Yeah, we've got it.
Okay.
He's got his own mic, so he's good.
Okay.
Okay. We'll get started. First of all, I love to give presentations, so that's my only joke of the night. So.
Not on his slideshow. Everything else.
So a little background on kind of how we got to where we are today. There was a federal court ruling on November 5th, this past fall. It was People for the Ethical Treatment of Property Owners, acronym PETPO, versus the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Basically, the court ruling vacated Fish and Wildlife's authority to regulate take of prairie dogs specific on non-federal lands. The judge basically found that the Commerce Clause does not apply since Utah prairie dogs are found only in southwestern Utah. The ruling basically returns management authority to us, specifically on non-federal lands, and prairie dogs are still fully protected on federal lands under ESA regulations. The prairie dog is one of five species found in North America, and it only exists in southwestern Utah. I'm not sure how well you can see this, but the large blue polygon is the black-tailed prairie dog, extends from Canada all the way down into Mexico. The red polygon is the white-tailed prairie dog, which we do have here in northeastern Utah. The yellow is the Gunnison's prairie dog, and as far as Utah, only in southeastern Utah, Blanding, Monticello, Moab area. We have the Mexican prairie dog down here, and then the little purple one is the Utah prairie dog. And again, it's found only in southwestern Utah. It was listed originally in 1973 as endangered. Estimates at the time put the animals at about 3,000 range wide. And this is the historic range of the prairie dog. This peach shape is the defined range. It doesn't necessarily mean prairie dogs are found on every square inch inside of that. The blue is as of 2014. This is where current colonies are located. This is Iron County here, Garfield County, Beaver, Paiute, Wayne, and Sevier. The blue shape does have a buffer around it. I think it's a 5-mile buffer. So the actual colony shapes are much smaller than just the blue shapes on the screen. 1984 was downlisted. Numbers rebounded, so it wasn't warranted an endangered listing. As of today, approximately 70% of all prairie dogs are on non-federal lands, unprotected. We're basically talking about private lands, SITLA. Estimated spring count of adults is approximately 16,000 animals. They prefer kind of a sage step habitat, kind of the secondary and tertiary levels, kind of out of the base and bottoms, which is great for where we like to plant our alfalfa and corn, so kind of the hence the reason for the plan. Contrary to popular belief, they do only produce one litter per year, and on average, they have about 4 pups, and that can depend on habitat quality. Can range anywhere from, I think, 1 to 7, but on average, it's 4 per litter. So a little history. The Division of Wildlife has been doing spring counts and translocations of Utah prairie dogs since the 1970s. Control permit program was initiated in the 1980s. At the time of the ruling, there was 5 HCPs in place. And for those who are unfamiliar with HCPs, that stands for Habitat Conservation Plan, which basically allows for incidental take of a protected species in lieu of conservation measures on protected lands. And the 5 that were active at the time of the ruling were the 1998 Habitat Conservation Plan for Iron County, the low-effect HCP for Iron County, the low-effect HCP for Garfield County, the golf course, Cedar City Golf Course, and Paiute Tribal Lands HCP, and then there was one private citizen who created his own HCP. His name was Connell Gower. Most of what we do for prairie dog recovery is directed by the Utah Prairie Dog Recovery Plan, which was first written in 1991 and then again revised in 2012. And kind of the 2 take-home numbers from the recovery plan is for 5 consecutive years, counting at least 1,000 adult spring-counted animals on public and protected lands in each of the 3 recovery units, and then 5,000 acres of protected habitat that is occupied in each of the 3 recovery units as well. So now we'll kind of get into the meat of the actual proposed plan. And before we move along, we just wanted to give some credit to a lot of the entities that came together to put this plan together. It was kind of spearheaded, you know, by us. But we took a lot of input from the county, specifically Iron County and Garfield County. We had a lot of help from our Attorney General's office, from the legal side, so a representative from Senator Vicker's office and Mike Noel, SITLA. All the other counties involved, Paiute Tribal Lands. So a lot of people came together for development of this plan. Our goal statement, there's basically 2 sections to it. To remove restrictions from private property through a timely and structured process while assisting the conservation of populations on designated federal and protected non-federal lands. The Prairie Dog Management Plan will basically direct prairie dog management statewide on private lands or non-federal lands while the species is listed under ESA, and then again it'll manage prairie dogs in all lands after it's become federally delisted. So when we were putting together the plan, we came up with three categories of which the different lands and different situations fell under. And then we also had two kind of overarching objectives that didn't quite fit into our categories. The first of which is to develop a series of our cooperative education and outreach system. We plan to work with the counties and to develop an online education and possibly a permitting system. And we're also planning on starting a series of outreach campaigns this spring, in which we'll kind of explain the value of prairie dogs on protected lands, the benefits of state management on non-federal lands, including CITLA, and kind of address some of the changes under the new management. And the second overarching objective was to remove restrictions on all non-federal lands that are not occupied by Utah prairie dogs. And before I move along, the blue bullet points are basically our objectives that we came up with, and the orange are the strategies that we've come up to meet those. So in order to remove restrictions on all federal lands not occupied by prairie dogs, as of acceptance of this plan, any property not mapped previously as Utah prairie dog habitat as of our last mapping season will be considered exempt from all restrictions due to Utah prairie dogs. Any properties that might be mapped but have become unoccupied will also be considered exempt. And what we mean by unoccupied is a colony that has had a zero count for at least the previous 5 years. When we went through the data, colonies became reactive after 2, 3, and 4 years, but once it stayed inactive for up to 5 years, rarely did it become active again. And we'll maintain the database of all mapped colonies, all occupied properties, and we'll be submitting those to the various building permit agencies around town, which then triggers the process for whether or not we need to even do a survey. So as an example of kind of what this means on the ground, on the left side here, this large green polygon is all of our colonies. And again, this is just for Cedar City and Enoch. This is one of kind of the hot spots. This is all of our colonies with a buffer around it of 1,300 feet, which was outlined in the current 1998 Habitat Conservation Plan. And that 1,300 feet takes into account disturbance distance, foraging distance, and some mapping error. And under the old HCP, anywhere inside of this green blob, we would be required to do a Utah prairie dog occupancy survey. So anywhere inside of that could have had either prairie dog habitat or prairie dogs on the ground. Restrictions basically could have been in place on any land inside of those green areas. With the new plan, there is no more buffer, so we're only surveying areas that actually have been mapped and are considered active, which means they've had at least one prairie dog within the last 5 years. So basically the difference of these two is roughly 51,000 acres of private property is now free from any kind of restrictions from Utah prairie dogs for potential development. So our next category we come to is health, safety, and welfare concern areas, and I will read the definition of that off. It's lengthy, but pretty encompassing. Defined as public use areas such as parks, golf courses, sports fields, playgrounds, airports, schools, churches, cemeteries, archaeological and historical sites, areas of cultural or religious significance, and improved roads, and residential and commercial areas within 50 feet of any occupied establishment and beyond 50 feet on developed portions of ground around the occupied establishment, such as lawns, landscaping, garden, and driveways. Basically what that means is most areas where people come into contact with prairie dogs. The second half of that definition basically means any area within 50 feet of an occupied dwelling, but if they occur in a portion of that property that's been developed, such as a driveway or a garden, that also qualifies as a safety concern. So our strategy was remove conflicts on non-federal lands where prairie dogs impact human health, safety, and welfare. And they can now be removed without a permit. We must be notified prior to them taking action. That way we can at least assess the situation. And they must report the number of prairie dogs taken. I think we have it as a monthly in the rule. And that's to give us a way to quantify the amount of take that occurs under this plan. even though it's not limited in this section, we need to know how many prairie dogs roughly are being taken through the plan. Along with that, we will target our trapping efforts in these same areas where prairie dogs might cause human health and safety concerns, such as subdivisions that are installed but not developed. There may be a large block of lots where prairie dogs are there, but they're not impacting necessarily a house nearby. We would go in and target trap those areas so that they do not become a problem in the future. So these next sections will actually be quantified and be subtracted from an annual take allotment. And the way we came up with this is the previous U.S. Fish and Wildlife 4D rule, which allowed for take of Utah prairie dogs on agricultural lands, had a limit of 6,000 animals, so we felt that was a defensible number for a take limit since it was already set by U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And take for this plan will come from agricultural, it'll come from range lands, and what we call developable lands, which I'll get to in a minute. So all those situations, take will have a limit of 6,000 animals. Take can be increased depending on the spring count of Utah prairie dogs on private lands. And what we have it set right now is it's one half of the overage above 6,000 animals. So if counts on private lands were 6,800 animals, that we would take one half of the overage of 800, which would be 400, and add that on to the 6,000 take limit. So that yearly take allotment would be 6,400 animals. It gives credit for maintaining some animals on private lands. Again, any prairie dogs taken for health, safety, and welfare are not deducted from this 6,000. Any prairie dogs that we trap and relocate from any situation are not counted against this 6,000. It only counts if it's a developable area in which we're not trapping, or agricultural take, which is lethal take, and as well as rangelands, which is also lethal take. So developable lands, now we have that defined as any area zoned as commercial, industrial, or residential that does not have structures or improvements on the surface of the property, excluding utilities. So this is basically any vacant building lot, whether it be residential or commercial, even if there are roads in place and utilities. If there's no surface structures, it's not considered developed. So if prairie dogs did occur on that parcel, they would need to receive take. And prior to any ground disturbance, we would need to be contacted. And again, when the entity goes to apply for a building permit, that triggers the process for us to be contacted. And then we come out and do an occupancy survey. If we don't find any prairie dogs, they are issued immediately a letter to proceed. If we do find prairie dogs, they are issued a permit for take of prairie dogs on that piece of ground. We call them COR, Certificate of Registrations. If they are issued take, it is deducted from the annual take allotment of 6,000 animals or more. If time frame does allow us to trap and relocate, then we do not count those animals against the 6,000 annual take limit. And again, we'll target trap areas such as undeveloped lots where prairie dogs may emigrate and cause development projects to need take. In the past, so under our old HCPs, there were mitigation fees. It was $1,000 an acre if you were taking Utah prairie dog habitat. There were other mitigation banks that were more expensive. Sitla credits were up to $2,000 per animal. Under this plan, there are no mitigation fees whatsoever. So those fall off the board, so to speak. I guess that's kind of a second joke. So the second area where take can be used is under agricultural and range lands. And we have agriculture areas defined as any land zone for agricultural use that is used for the production of a cultivated crop or irrigated pasture that is currently used or has been used in the previous 5 years for producing a crop that can be harvested. So the goal, the objective was to, again, alleviate impacts of prairie dogs on agricultural and range lands. So under the previous 4D rule, we were issuing permits for take of Utah prairie dogs, and that will continue under this plan. Take will again be deducted from 6,000 animals, the annual take limit range-wide. One thing we've done away with in this plan is the minimum prairie dogs needed for a take permit on agricultural lands. The previous 4D rule required a minimum of 7 animals counted in the springtime to receive a permit, or 25 animals counted in the summer after juvenile production. We've done away with that limit, so even if they have one They'll get a permit for a calculated number of animals. And the way we calculate that, on the left side of this chart here, this side right here, this is the count of Utah prairie dogs, a spring adult count, per recovery unit as a three-year rolling average. So hopefully that makes sense. We can go over that again. And on the right side generates how much take can be given per landowner or per COR, per permit for agricultural take. And the way we calculate productivity is, I think that's on the next slide, yeah. So as an example, it's probably easier just to run through an example than to go through the actual calculation. Let's say, for instance, an agricultural property had a spring count of 75 adult animals. The way we would calculate take is we take the 75 spring count, we multiply that by 2 for sightability, because research shows that any up to 50% of prairie dogs are below ground at any one time. We then multiply that by 0.67, or 67%, which is the number of females in a colony. We then multiply that by 0.97, or 97%, which is the percentage of females that actually breed. We multiply that by 4, which again is the average litter size. So a spring count of 75 adult animals creates a total productivity of 390 juvenile prairie dogs. And step 2 is then when we refer to the table, for a real world calculation, as of right now in the West Desert Recovery Unit, which is primarily Iron County, our three-year average of prairie dogs on protected lands is 666 animals. So as of right now, take calculations fall in this very upper level of take. So that then provides for 50% of productivity. So the productivity was 390 animals times 0.5. So for this particular ground, he would be eligible to receive a permit to take 195 prairie dogs, even though we only counted 75 in the spring. Should an agricultural landowner decide he doesn't want to kill prairie dogs, there is a voluntary incentive system that we've set up. And again, it's contingent on funding from the legislature. We have a bill in right now, and we'll see if that comes through. Applications will be evaluated as they come in, and under our actual administrative rule, things such as funding, the number of animals on that piece of ground, the availability of the release sites at the time, all of those will factor into if the applications are accepted and how many we can actually process for a particular year. But basically what it does is the landowner forgoes lethal take of prairie dogs to allow us to trap and relocate the animals. That way they can be used for conservation effort on federal lands and protected lands. Our trapping season is July through September, so we'd be given 3 months to trap that piece of property and translocate as many prairie dogs as we could. The participant will receive compensation for damages, and they also may obtain a lethal permit after we're done trapping for the remainder of the season. And the way we came up with the compensation schedule, it's kind of a lengthy calculation, but there's some research out there that shows how much. And we base this on alfalfa, because that's the primary crop in the West Desert for the most part, and the Ponsagon Recovery Unit. Adult prairie dogs eat approximately 3/4 of a pound of succulent alfalfa a day, and juveniles about half that. And when you factor in the amount of time they're up for the season, it actually comes out to $45.90 per adult prairie dog of seasonal damage. I don't think we have the chart that actually shows a full calculation. But for instance, a landowner in the West Desert had a spring count this year of 170 adult prairie dogs. That translocated into about $7,500 in the compensation program. And on top of that, we would actually add an additional 10% for damages to equipment, fence posts, miscellaneous stuff that comes up. We realize that equipment doesn't get damaged every year, but from time to time, some of that will happen. So that's, we met with a bunch of landowners, and they agreed that 10% was a good number. So that kind of wraps up the private land side of the plan. We also are going to work to continue to conserve and grow prairie dogs on public lands. And kind of the overarching objective is, again, retain state management on the non-federal lands and apply conservation measures on federal lands. And The two objectives, sub-objectives, is one is conserving population, the second one, which is increasing, which will be on the next slide. But to conserve populations, we plan to continue to partner with the recovery implementation team, which was set up years ago to kind of guide recovery, as well as local governments. Continue to cooperate with federal agencies. We've met with BLM and U.S. Forest Service with this, creating this management plan. Establish state funding, which we're currently working on, hoping it comes through. Acquiring protected habitats, which is, you know, voluntary private lands that want to set aside prairie dog easements. We'll continue to monitor our translocation sites for predators, disease management. The division is currently getting ready for their third year of the sabbatic plague vaccine field trials, which myself and Brian actually are two field leaders for Utah. So, and then just to continue all sorts of research projects, translocation, habitat treatments. And then again, we have the same overarching objective, but the second sub-objective is to then increase populations. A lot of the same strategies apply. We'll continue to identify and establish translocation sites, coordinating with BLM and U.S. Forest Service to move dogs. Again, we'll be taking them from safety concern areas, future development areas, agricultural and rangelands. We'll continue to support recovery objectives that are consistent with this plan. And then work towards developing a multi-year translocation plan, probably a minimum of 5 years, and then further on out. A few key provisions that are kind of in the rule but don't necessarily appear in the plan. Again, prairie dogs cannot be taken on federal lands except authorized by U.S. Fish and Wildlife under that rule. Any prairie dogs found inside an inhabited structure can be taken immediately because they may present an immediate health risk. Permits can be issued to county or city law enforcement, basically giving that law enforcement the ability to make the decision if there's an existing health, safety, or welfare concern on the spot. In all other cases, prairie dogs can only be taken by a landowner, the lessee of land, an immediate family member of the landowner or lessee, an employee on regular payroll, and that's to assure that people are not hiring folks to come by and just be hired guns for killing prairie dogs, or an approved designee. As far as methods of take, any legal means that is permitted by state, local, or federal law. A keynote is a person cannot capture or attempt to capture a live prairie dog, possess a live prairie dog, or release a prairie dog into the wild. So this is all lethal take. This is not live capture. Again, prairie dogs cannot be taken on protected lands, which are private land easements. They function the same way as federal lands. And again, prairie dogs were removed from the small animal rule, and then we're going to change the classification from prohibited to controlled, which allows us an easier permitting process for take. And that's it.
Okay. Questions from the rack?
Not a question, Chairman, but I need to have another obligation. But I just want to put on record that I am in favor of the Utah Prairie Dog Management Plan and the rule affecting the take.
Thanks, Randy.
Thank you, Randy.
Got you out of here by 7 o'clock.
Good. Promise me that on Thursday.
What's that?
Oh.
Thank you.
Any questions?
These little guys, will they hybridize with other species of prairie dogs? If there's
not research shows, no. They're geographically isolated from the others with Grant, basically Lake Powell and the Grand Canyon to the south, and then kind of some of these canyons in I-70 to the north. So I don't think there's been any that I know of. Brian, are you aware of any? I think white-tailed prairie dogs and Utah prairie dogs is where they come the closest, basically between. The prairie dogs in southern Utah and the ones up here. So they did do some genetic testing on Utah prairie dogs alone in the different recovery units, which are kind of isolated elevationally, and they actually found there may be more subspecies of just the Utah prairie dogs, so they stopped that right where it was.
That's good. So they fluctuate significantly, the populations?
Yeah, this past spring was the highest count ever on record since we've been counting prairie dogs since 1972, I think. We had a really mild winter in southern Utah, So overwinter survival was great. And then we got some moisture.
Like right now, like a month ago, past spring, or a year ago?
A year ago.
Well, it was the same here for some reason.
Yeah.
I mean, all the prairie dogs.
Yeah, I saw quite a few that were up running around on my way in today, so.
So with that kind of open winter, do they have two gestations a year?
Nope, just one.
Just one.
And then the females only come into estrus one day a year.
That's interesting.
But, I mean, if you remember the calculation, 97% of them get bred, so.
Yeah. Other questions from Ryan? I got one. Just kind of go back to the beginning then. Mm-hmm. So with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, where are they at with the species?
Well, if you remember, there were the two take-home numbers were 1,000 animals counted in each recovery unit on protected lands for five consecutive years. This spring, the Ponsagon Recovery Unit, which is mostly Garfield County, reached that goal for the first time this year. They had actually 1,500 animals counted on, basically, for the most part, U.S. Forest Service land. The West Desert was just shy of 1,000. The Whopper Recovery Unit, which is basically Wayne County and a little bit of Sevier, was just shy of 1,000 as well. Kind of what I heard through Fish and Wildlife is that they thought that was close enough and they would start year one of the clock. It has to happen for five consecutive years. So should that happen for four more years, it's possible that they could be delisted in 4 years. We did have some population collapses this summer. We had a large colony in Iron County that got the Sylvatic Plague. And so I'm not hopeful that recovery unit will make it to 1,000 next year. But we were close this year. This is the best we've been, so.
Yeah, I was looking at your numbers. So in 99, the collapse was probably the plague.
Yeah, and there we went through a drought. I wasn't around then. I got to Utah in 2005, but from what I've been told is we had a fairly heavy drought in the early 2000s. We had a lot of kind of range collapse and habitat conversion, especially in the West Desert. A lot of those kind of grasslands and shrub steps kind of went to sage, and prairie dogs, they won't live in sage because they can't see, basically. Mm-hmm. So kind of a whole perfect storm of things happened, and numbers were actually over 1,000 animals in the West Desert in the late 90s and early 2000s, and they collapsed down to 200 to 300 animals. So they've rebounded. Like I said, this year was just under 1,000 again, so barring basically a plague outbreak, we're hoping to be close to that number again next year.
So the 6,000 take is for all those counties?
6,000 take is for range-wide of the whole species.
In the county, wherever they may appear.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Iron County has roughly 70% of the prairie dogs range-wide. Garfield County has probably 15-20%, and then the Oahu Plateau has maybe 10-15%. But yeah, that take is for, and I have a few numbers here I can kind of, so the 6,000, again, that used to be used just for agricultural take, and now it'll be used for agricultural take and kind of developable take. But over the previous 5 years, we've actually had a total or an average reported take of 2,390 animals for agricultural purposes. So on average, that would leave an extra 3,600 animals to be used for all other, for basically developable land. And we usually give only a couple hundred take for developable land. So the 6,000, I mean, should be more than sufficient for take for the whole range.
Okay, any questions?
Maybe one more question. What was it? Did you, the population estimate for the whole range-wide Utah prairie dog, was it possible?
Yeah. slide there. It was... I better just go back to make sure I get it right. Well, I have it somewhere.
We're just kind of wondering how that 6,000 number related to the overall population estimate.
Yeah, okay, so on private lands, the adult spring count with sightability, so assuming half are underground, half are above ground, was 16,000 animals, adult prairie dogs on private lands, range-wide. If you actually calculate that through with productivity, that's young of the year, the total population estimate range-wide for this past summer was 82,000 prairie dogs. But again, when you break down the different categories, only about 10 to 15% of that population is on the developable areas where prairie dogs would be taken for, you know, building homes and commercial development. So we're hopeful that we don't come near that 6,000 number. Because a lot of those, I think any animals we trap are not counted against that. So, and we're hoping that more animals will be trapped than taken. So.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get a percentage, because it looks like less than 10%.
So. Yeah. I think I have a little breakdown here. Yeah, but where most of the take is going to occur, which is going to be Iron County, the non-agricultural land where prairie dogs occur is only 13.5% of the entire population. So,
13.5% what?
Of the entire population. This is over a five-year average, but... and then the agricultural percentage is roughly 49% of the population. And this is, again, this is comparing Iron County to the range of species that where Iron County is going to be where most of the take occurs. So.
Any questions about the public one?
BLM.
Within the historical boundary?
Yeah.
Or is it put in with the population that's there?
It can be both. We create our own translocation sites, basically in suitable habitat. We also will move dogs into colonies that have experienced a collapse in recent years. It's easier to use burrows that have been created naturally than to kind of try to create our own. So they'll go into brand new sites where we install nest boxes and tubing. We put out supplemental feed. We'll also put prairie dogs into colonies that have kind of collapsed in recent years, but they all go to federal lands.
Okay. Any comments by the public? Any comments by the RAC? Further discussion by the RAC and a motion?
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we go ahead and accept the management plan as it's been presented here to us tonight.
I'll second it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. It's unanimous vote. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item.
Yeah, I guess the intent was that they would both be voted on at the same time.
That's the way it came to us. It's two different things.
Okay, yeah, we didn't do a presentation for the rule. The last two slides were showing the provisions of the rule compared to the plan. So I think Kevin's original idea was that they would both kind of, well, you could vote on separately. Obviously, you have to, I think. But that they would just be done at the same time.
Gotcha. So we have the information. Vote. Now we just have to, okay.
Okay. Yeah, I was just looking at the agenda was sent out.
Okay, that's everything.
It looks like the rules coincide with management plan.
Yeah, we basically created the plan first and then kind of adapted the rule to it. So.
Okay, anything else from the RAC?
No.
Nothing else?
We involved all on that rule, right?
The
guess we're going to have to, because that's what I'm seeing. We've kind of had it as a separate item.
Yeah.
Let's do, so we need motions on, we've got the three rules there.
Two.
Two rules?
Well.
You have collection and transportation, importation.
Yep.
We need to vote on each rule, or you think combine them as three? All three rules, one vote?
Combine them if you like.
Yeah, if we need a motion, discussion?
A motion may accept it as presented.
I second it.
Group motion, David seconded.
Beth did it, but that's.
Sorry, Beth, sorry. Knew someone coming out of my mouth, right? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, unanimous. That's a rule. The Wildlife Board meeting is this Thursday, the 5th. It's all late. And all these boards are having their meeting tonight. So all the RACs had meetings across the state this evening. They had different presenters at each meeting. And we got the best of the best.
I don't know about that, but you got me.
What's going on there?
Okay, I appreciate you guys taking time on an unscheduled meeting. Very much.
Thanks for not being so hard on me.
These guys are never hard. They ask some good questions. No, it's not until April.